Hello and welcome to this edition of the FitCast. This is episode number 221. I'm Kevin Larrabee and we're doing something a little bit different for this episode. I'm going to be talking with Jim Smitty Smith and we're just going to kind of talk shop. And the reason why we're doing this is one, you know, I end up calling up a lot of guys and just picking their brains about things, and it helps me, you know, stay in contact with a lot of these guys and also hear what everyone else is doing so I can stay on top of my game when it comes to training my clients and athletes. You don't want to just fall behind. Everything is always evolving in this industry. So you kind of know how it is from listening to the podcast yourself. But we're going to try this first time. Just going to not, we don't even have an outline when we did this. We just kind of said, all right, let's talk, go over a couple subjects and we'll see how it goes. So this is going to be the first attempt at it. Let us know if you like it or if you don't like it. We're gonna probably just put these like in the middle of the week as just an interview section. The couple more that we have lined up is one with Allie McKee that I'm hoping to do next Thursday, so it might come a little bit later in the week, but we will try to get it out before the Monday morning or Monday afternoon show. And then let's get on the line with Smitty and let's talk about some stuff a little bit. We haven't had him on in a while, and we need to know how Harry Potter finishes his journey. So it's important that we have him on for that too. So stick around. We're going to be talking with Smitty right now. All right, with me right now is Jim Smitty Smith of the Diesel Crew. You can check out the website, dieselsc.com. Jim, how's it going, man?
What's up, buddy?
We're talking on Saturday night at 9 p.m.
We have absolutely no life whatsoever.
No, man, I was just, I was thinking about maybe watching some Netflix tonight. I don't have cable anymore. I don't know if you're, have left the world of cable, but it seems like a lot of people are starting to drop their cable provider and just stick with, like, internet services and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's probably the best thing to do. I'm still a glutton for punishment and pay for that every month, but I was actually debating whether to get the UFC tonight or not.
That's right.
Yeah. Do you have any predictions for that, or you don't follow it that much?
That's the one thing. That's the thing I get the most crap for, is I don't really follow UFC so much. I follow more the WWE stuff.
All right. Well, the interview's over right now.
The thing is, I kind of follow it when it's like the really big, like the whatever the heavyweight matches were, and I watched. I actually paid for the match where Brock Lesnar like won whatever it was, like in the first round or something like that. And then he gave that interview at the end where he kind of like got pissed off at the fans. That was the last one that I watched, and that must have been 2 years ago.
It might have been Herring. I don't think that was I think that went a couple rounds. It might have been the second Mir fight. I can't remember, but I know that he did bash one of the sponsors or something. I can't remember.
Oh, that's right. The beer sponsor is like a Budweiser or something like that.
He's like, screw you, I'm drinking Coors or something. I don't know.
But now it doesn't look like he's going to be – do you think he's even going to be back at all to fight? I know he got sick.
Yeah. What did he get, diverticulitis or something like that?
Yeah.
It was something where he wasn't eating enough roughage or vegetables or something, and he had some real bad colon issues. I don't know if he's going to be back or not. I think he has the same thing going on.
Well, that's my extent for UFC information. That's really all I got. And except for the guys like Kenny Florian, the Transair facility, who I exchange words with once in a while, but I usually stay out of his way because he could kill me.
Well, Tom Lawler trains there, right? And Joe Lozon.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, Kyle Holland, who hopefully is going to be getting up a website soon. He trains all those guys and does a great job with the UFC guys over there.
Yeah, I really like Tom Lawler. I've been corresponding with him for a few years now, and he hit me up a while ago and said he was a fan of Diesel and all that stuff. But I met him at a fan expo, and awesome guy. He's huge. Yeah. He's like, yeah, he's a tough guy, man.
It is interesting because those guys, like if I'm training someone else, like I'll just kind of like say hi to them. They seem like the nicest guys in the world, but it was just, they're, you know, what they do is something that I could never, you know, I could never even understand what it must take to put yourself through not only the training that they go through, obviously, but then, you know, the actual match where it's like almost bare knuckle. Obviously, they have they have pads on their hands, but you know, that's just getting in the octagon and just going nuts, where guys can just get messed up in a, you know, an instant, just one swing.
Yeah, I mean, that just tells you what skill and speed can do to you, because the fighters I train, obviously, they're not even close in strength to me, but their speed and power is just unbelievable. Like watching them hit pads and stuff, I would always joke with them, you know, I'm gonna take you on the mat and stuff. Like, they just smirk, you know, they're just so. I would never mess with them. Like when they hit the pad, it's like intimidating. They're so explosive, it's crazy. Well, and like, you know, the dudes in UFC, I mean, it's just a different level, you know.
Well, let's talk a little bit about UFC training, because there is one little piece of information, or, you know, one conversation that I've had with you know, a strength coach in the industry who brought up something another strength coach or someone who trains UFC athletes said, and it was something along the lines of, everything my fighters do, they do it at the same weight of the person that they're going to fight against. So if they're going to bench, they bench the body weight of whoever they're going up against, or they, you know, they squat that weight. Did you hear about this, or did you read this, or, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
No, I haven't read that, but I can tell you, typically when you're dealing with fighters, and I've seen, obviously, with gymnasts and stuff like that, when you they're a master of their own body weight. I mean, they can do so much with loads upwards of you know, however much they weigh. But when you like go 5-10 pounds over their body weight, mm-hmm. you see so much stuff happen. Like, you know, they break down, they can't lift it, they lose form, stuff like that. So I wouldn't imagine that I would stay, you know, just at their body weight. In our program, we're not limiting the weight that they can do for different things at just their body weight. And I know that in our program, their skill work is where their body weight training, where they're, you know, they're rolling with a you know, an opponent that's their own same size and different things like that. That's where their body weight training. But when we're trying to build up their strength, we're not going to limit ourselves to, you know, just moving weights close to whatever they weigh. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Are you saying like a 35 pounder is going to just, you know, work with 135? You know, no way. You know, that's our opinion. That's my opinion. And, you know, whenever you're dealing with any type of athlete, building up their absolute strength is key for a lot of things. Their ability, you know, if you build up their strength, they're going to be more powerful. That's it. It carries over across that whole continuum. So I haven't heard that, and it doesn't seem like that would be something that we would limit ourselves in our program.
Yeah, it sounds like just what you said. It's a limiting factor that kind of restricts you from things that you would do in your program. Just doing, I guess it was, you know, you pick this weight and you do as many reps as possible throughout the various exercises. But you brought up speed, and obviously dynamic effort stuff plays a big role in strength training. Does it play even a bigger role when it comes to training MMA athletes, when, you know, speed is, you know, do you think it's even a bigger factor compared to other sports like football and baseball and basketball, or is it kind of on the same level?
Well, I would say everything, there's no absolutes, and everything in a program for an athlete is individualized. So a dynamic exercise might provide something for an athlete who's pretty strong but slow. Mm-hmm. But if you have like a real explosive athlete, you know, sometimes it's better to spend more time down near the strength, or down near the strength range, where you're, you know, hitting some more deliberate reps with more, you know, with heavier weights. So I would say it's really an individual thing, but yes, as you develop the athlete, you know, they might move from a starting point where, you know, they might need more strength. Mm-hmm. And as you move forward, yes, dynamic effort does play a huge role, along with other like stuff like plyos and jump training and, you know, different things like that, med ball work, to build on their explosiveness. But like I said, it's really an individual assessment. You need to start somewhere, and we don't even bring in the dynamic stuff until, you know, they show proficiency in you know, all the basic compound movements and body weight stuff. So,
Gotcha. We kind of wrote up a couple topics to kind of go through tonight, and we don't know if we'll get through all of them. But one of the things I have to thank you for is bringing it back to professional wrestling, you know, the real wrestling, is that the Rock is on Twitter, and he is a fantastic person to follow if you are on Twitter. And thanks to you, I, you know, found out that he was on there, and he's talking a lot of smack to John Cena, and he's always talking about his training. He's getting ready for G.I. Joe. I just want to say that I want to say thank you for letting me know The Rock was out there. And, you know, what are your thoughts? I mean, you definitely seem to be having a good time following, because I'm always watching the correspondence, like, back and forth and stuff like that.
Yeah, man. You know what? I'm a fan. It doesn't even have to be The Rock. I'm a fan of anyone that is passionate.
And exactly.
If you look at his Twitter, everything is positive. Everything is about bringing it, team bring it, all that stuff. He's positive every day, and he's like, you know what I mean? You got to work hard. He's always tweeting pictures of, you know, him on the set and him working out and him just doing a lot of positive stuff, motivating others, and everything he tweets out, there's nothing negative. I mean, except for, you know, the smack talk against Cena. But anyone that's passionate like that, I want to follow, because I want to get up to that level. I think more so now as I get older, I'm getting close to 40. And I just look for that motivation, because it motivates me, and I try to motivate other people. And you probably seen a lot of my posts on Diesel about, you know, there's a lot of inspirational stuff and, you know, me trying to get people off their ass and get them doing stuff again. You know, no one's taking action. Everyone's so negative, and that's what I hate. If you look on CNN or Fox News, everything's about kidnapping, murder, and the government and taxes and the budget and deficit. I just hate it, man. And you know what that does? It just plays into everyone just sitting around their house watching TV, being negative. I just can't handle it anymore. And I just want to be surrounded by people that are positive. And that was the biggest thing I got of following The Rock on Twitter, you know?
Yeah, and it's interesting that you bring that up for a couple reasons. I mean, one, obviously, I think it is important that people, you know, there definitely are, whether it's in the fitness industry or not, people who are always, you know, posting stuff, whether it's inspirational quotes, and we have them all over our facility at Mike Boyle's. And it is good to see that stuff, just to make sure you get your, you know, get your head right, you know, you get your head in it, and you're making sure you're on the right track. And you wrote an article for Livestrong recently, and you talked about balancing fitness with a busy life, because, like you said, you know, you got a family, man, and you're, like I said, we're recording this on at 9 o'clock, so you're making the time to do, you know, a little bit of everything. But how do you balance it all out?
Without a doubt. I mean, the way you balance it out is just organization. I mean, you have to have, like, the night before, you should be writing down what goals you're going to be hitting the next day. And I'm not talking about a laundry list. I'm talking about 3 attainable goals that you know that you can hit as long as you, you know, work toward getting them done. You know, something attainable in the next day. You don't want to, like, go through a whole day without doing something. For you and I, it would be, you know, on the website, shooting a video, writing an article, taking exercise pictures, emailing a strength coach, reading a fitness article. I mean, those are the things that we do. But for other people, it could be, you know, something at work, a PowerPoint presentation, doing something, you know, at school for your kids. Everybody has different goals, and everybody should be writing those down. I mean, that was the biggest thing that I was trying to convey in the article for Livestrong. And the other thing was just taking action. Like we just said, everyone's so hesitant. I mean, we see it all the time. Like, we go to all these strength seminars, and I just got back from the Peak seminar at Joe Dowdell's place in New York City. And the first thing I was trying to convey to everyone, I was on, like, the Q&A panel there, was just to take action. You go to all these seminars and you don't do anything. You just write all these notes. You just go home and just keep going without a second thought. You got to take action, man. And you got to write the articles. You got to shoot the videos. You got to email people. it's that's the key, or else nothing's going to get done, you know? And for me, I'm all the time. I'm like up till 1 a.m. every night. You know, Gary Vaynerchuk, I was watching one of his keynotes speeches, and he just talked about people saying, you know, they don't have enough time. They don't have enough time. And he's basically said, if you have a passion and you work all day and you come home, you stay with the kids till 8 o'clock, and 8 to 1 a.m., 8 to 2 a.m. is when you get stuff done. And what you could hear in the audience, you know, there was laughs and stuff like that, but he was dead serious. And I'm dead serious when I tell you that's when I work. You got to work when other people are sleeping. That's the reality. If you have a passion and you don't have time because you're working another job that allows you to work on your passion at night, I mean, you got to make it happen. And 8 to 1 a.m. is when I make it happen. That's it. And there's no substitution. I don't feel sorry for myself. I don't say, well, can I get enough sleep tomorrow? I don't say any of that. I just put my head down. I write the articles. I shoot the videos. I call people. That's what I do. And if you have something you're working on, opening a business, you know, creating a group for something, building something, I don't know. You just got to work when other people are taking a break. One of my other mentors that I speak with on a regular basis, name's Eric Thomas. Very, very amazing person. And he was saying about 50 Cent. And when 50 Cent was shooting this movie, he said that 50 was not only in the movie, and I can't remember what the movie was. I just remember the message. The message was, they asked 50, when do you sleep? Because 50 was not only in the movie, he was writing the music for the movie. And they said, when do you sleep, 50? And, you know, this is a bad impersonation of Eric Thomas. He says a lot more eloquently, but he's telling the story about 50, and 50 goes, I don't sleep. He goes, sleep is for people who are broke. And you don't sleep. You have to make sacrifices to get stuff done. And that, for me, is working 8 to 1. You know what I mean? Like, when I get home, the kids, I spend time with the kids. They go to bed. Then I go to work. That's it. And if you have a passion, you want to get somewhere in this life, if you have goals, if you want to go to the next level, you need to work from 8 to 1. That's it. No excuses. I have no time for people with excuses. You know what I mean? That, you have to make it happen.
That's a good point. I think, you know, a lot of people out there, if they are kind of stuck in, you know, whether it's a rut or whatnot, but you brought up Gary V in his book, Crush It, has a lot of those messages is in there. And it's actually funny. I talked to John Romanello 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, and he's actually training Gary, and it's like, yeah, it's the same thing. It kind of rubs off, and it seems like, you know, it's definitely what you're kind of bringing up rubs off on your you know, your mentorship group too, where you got to kind of spread that message. And I've definitely tried to take bits and pieces of that, but after I read Crush It, I was up until like 1 or 2 in the morning every night, and then getting up at, you know, like 6:30, 7 o'clock, and after about a week, like, I was screwed. Like, I was dead. Like, obviously that setup didn't work for me, so I had to like adjust it. So, you know, I gotta make sure at least I get like 6.5 hours of sleep, but make sure that time is really focused, you know. Yeah, so it's less screwing around, you know.
Yeah, of course. I'm not saying, you know, 8 to 1 every night. I mean, you might need a day where you take a break and, you know, you don't work on something, but those 3 or 4 days in a row where you're really focused, it sets you up for the opportunity to take a break on that 4th, 5th day, whatever. But you just have to, I'm not talking every night. I'm talking about what you can manage. And if you're doing absolutely everything you need to do to reach your goals, and not blaming others, and not being hesitant, and not giving excuses. That's it. If, you know, I'm not saying every night you need to do that, but you need to take away those obstacles where you're telling yourself you don't have enough time and you just need to find time. That's it.
This kind of actually goes into another thing that I want to talk about. I didn't write it down in our notes, but it's something that I've talked about with a couple of guys in the industry. And that's, you know, the industry is kind of playing it safe lately. And the best way I can describe that is, you know, it feels like, and it, you definitely you know, the reason why I bring this up is because a couple minutes ago you were talking about, you know, challenging yourself. And if people have been checking out like the Diesel Crew website, you have been challenging yourself, like doing the, like the muscle ups and stuff like that, on the rings, like giving yourself new challenges. And I still feel, like lately when people have been like, whether it's talking about stuff, and this is kind of hard to make a general assumption, because I obviously the group that I talk to with the Fitcast is one subset of the fitness industry. And there's definitely like the CrossFit group is kind of another subset. And, the more commercial side is another subset. But, you know, when it comes to people giving out, you know, programming and stuff like that, do you feel like people are kind of playing it safe? Like it's a little bit too safe, where we're always trying to say, you know, we're doing everything humanly possible to prevent injuries without, you know, challenging our athletes? Or is there a way we can challenge our athletes while still playing it safe?
Wow.
That was a lot. I know. I tend to ramble. I don't know if you know that, but.
Are you talking about sort of like web-based training where people are, you know, doing their online consulting and different things?
Yeah, I feel like it's getting stale, man. Like, I feel we had a great example, like back in 2007 when we met at Ryan Lee's boot camp. I felt like there was a lot of excitement there. Like, there was a lot of things were changing, a lot of, you know, people were trying a lot of different things. And now I feel like things have kind of settled down to where we're just kind of like playing it safe. Like, everyone's got like the blog going, and, you know, everyone has, you know, kind of like the same programs out there, although again, there's different people that are writing programs for different audiences. But, for the most part, I feel like we're all kind of falling into the same patterns.
Yeah. I mean, everybody is definitely, you know, we live in a litigious world, you know, and I think that as strength coaches, there's sort of been, you know, I haven't really prepared a statement for this, but, I think the strength coach industry and performance enhancement and personal trainers, all that stuff, it's becoming more of a hybrid now. I mean, especially with all the information that's coming out around, you know, like Eric and Mike's Assess and Correct and Weingroff's Training Equals Rehab, all those things is providing people with more and more information. Now, more information is good and is bad at the same time, because, you know, it's sort of that, I mean, going back to the liberal media, you know, the media is telling us all these negative things, you know, this fear and all the, you know, the debt and all this stuff. So I would anticipate that there is a feeling of just be safe than sorry. I mean, you know, you wrote down a point about like core training and stuff and how everyone's so against crunches and sit-ups and all this stuff. And I'm not a fan of absolutes. You know, if someone says, you know, absolutely this is bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's some people it's bad for, of course. People with pre-existing issues, of course. But some people can do it. I mean, there's people that can behind the neck press the rest of their life and never have an issue. Yeah. There might be one person that does it one time and screws up their shoulder the rest of their life. So there's no absolutes, you know, and I don't want to, you know, challenging yourself. You shouldn't be so scared to challenge yourself. You know, I'm almost 40, and, you know, I just hit a muscle up on the rings the other day. You know, I know that's a small example, you know, that we're talking about, but online training and all the stuff that everyone's pushing out, I would say is safer. And I would say that's not a bad thing. I mean, the more information we have, the better we'll be able to provide programming. I mean, but we don't want, like you said, we don't want the pendulum to swing too far one way or the other where, you know, we're leaving out stuff that might be good. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like crunches, if we want to go into this now, you know, crunches and sit-ups and stuff, they might be bad for some people, you know, but they might not be bad for other people. Brad and Brett just did that paper, To Crunch or Not to Crunch, mm-hmm. I think the name of it. I mean, they talked about, if I understand their conclusion correctly, is that exactly what I said. You know, some people can tolerate flexion-based exercises and some people can't. You know, are you saying that if you actually – I think Brett did a video about this a long, long time ago about crunches, and if you're actually flexing at the lumbar. And he showed that you can do crunches without doing that. And McGill has, you know, McGill's curl up, where, you know, he provides an alternative to crunches. It's basically the same thing. It's a crunch where your torso sort of remains neutral as you lift off the floor, and your chin's in neutral alignment as well. And so there's ways to do crunches that are effective. And Brad and Brett showed that through their research that it's okay to do that. And but like I said, it might not be okay for certain populations. But like I said, there's no absolutes. You don't want to start thinking about absolutes. I mean, there's things that we absolutely won't include, but there's always a reason why, and you need to do research. I don't know if I don't know if I answered the question, but what I'm trying to say is, I think I agree with you. If you're saying that people are trying to be safer than sorry, you know what I mean? And people are trying to be, more reserved in their programming, and I think that's okay. But I don't want to leave out some of the good exercises or exercises that, you know, might help some populations.
Well, I think you read my mind, because that was exactly where I wanted to go, was to go into the whole crunching discussion, and where, you know, I still think that is one of the things where it is. I don't know if it's an overreaction, but I always feel like, you know, we have, you know, someone come out and say something, then there's a complete overreaction and people just end up cutting things out. And then at the end of the day, you know, what do you have left to program with? I mean, obviously we still have a ton of things, and thankfully we have, you know, these great tools now, with whether it's like TRX or kettlebells or, you know, all these other things that, you know, whether they've been around for a long time or not, we do have the tools and the toys to play around with, and right, at least keep things fresh for our clients, because that's, you know, unfortunately, like, part of our job is to kind of keep things fresh while still making sure we're giving them a solid program and making sure it's balanced. Right. You know, if a client's bored, they're not going to stick around with you because they feel like they're doing the same workout every single day and they're getting bored, whether they're getting results or not. Yeah.
Well, I would also say that, you know, if people were saying, you know, an exercise long term or high volume or, you know, whatever is going to provide restriction, you know, if we're, like people say, you know, hip flexor shortening and all that stuff. If the workout's good and the program's thorough and comprehensive, then hip mobility and thoracic mobility and lumbar stability and all that stuff will get taken care of. You know what I mean? There's not you know, there's not going to be that limitation or inhibition or restriction or whatever. You know what I mean? Does that make sense? I'm just saying that, you know, some people say exercises, you know, restrict you as opposed to, you know, provide better movement. But if the workout and the warm up, I mean, you know, we talk about the warm up all the time, but if the warm up is thorough and comprehensive, all that stuff gets taken care of anyway.
Well, we'll kind of move on a little bit here. Again, we're kind of jumping all over the place, but this is kind of cool. This allows me to kind of pick your brain, but also the audience gets to hear the responses. So it's win-win for everyone.
They might as well cut out by now.
I think they'll stick around. Like they really like, you know, when you come on, there's always a lot of good stuff going on. And let's go back to the, you know, the sense of, not necessarily core training, but bracing. Another one of the things that you've been kind of talking about on the website, and it's something that we do try to teach to all of our athletes and clients, because there is a huge component, whether we're, you know, deadlifting or doing a push up or doing like an inverted row, just being able to, you know, hold proper postural alignment while we're, you know, moving load. So how do you go about teaching bracing with your athletes? And you know, here's the challenge: can you kind of teach people to do it over the internet through a podcast?
Well, I think we can. I actually have a pretty popular how to deadlift video on YouTube. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many hits it has, but it has a lot, and I talk a lot about bracing in that video. And I think people seem to get it. And the way we talk about it is, it's sort of it's a collaboration between breathing and tension. You know what I mean? So a lot of people, unfortunately, when they set up for a lot, most compound movements, you know, let's just use the big three, you know, bench, squat, dead. They don't know what tension is. And the way we teach, I teach it a lot of ways, with baseball bats, with, I go around and hit our athletes, you know what I mean? In the back and side and like, wake up, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's how we teach it. But, the simplest way I can tell you is, with our fighters, very simple. We tell them to brace for impact as if they're getting hit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's bracing. Okay. The way we teach it on the video for the deadlift, we set it up with, you know, a deep, belly breath, you know, diaphragmatic breath, and we create tension by pulling the slack out of the bar. And what that means is we're engaging the lats. You know, we set up with a neutral lumbar, we squeeze our hips, all that stuff is done prior to any movement on the bar. So we grab the bar and we tug upward, taking the slack out, and we drop the hips. And in that motion, tension is created. Okay. That's what bracing is. Okay. And a lot of people don't understand the breathing aspect. And we teach, like I said, the belly breath where, you inhale and your abdomen expands.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that creates that inner abdominal pressure. From there, after that inner unit is pressurized, the outer unit where, you know, you have the erectors and the abdominals and the glutes, everything from the armpit to the knees, like Alan Cosgrove says, is tensioned. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that the tension between the muscle groups, they call that intermuscular tension. Sif might say co-contraction, all that stuff. It's basically full body tension. You want to be squeezing everything. And we also teach it. It starts with the hands. You know, we talk a lot about grip strength for athletics, but that's also developed in the gym, you know, just by grabbing the bar real hard. We tell them white knuckles or gripping the bar, or melting the bar, all that stuff. You want real tight on the end point of that kinetic chain, and then that transfers throughout the rest of the body.
Hmm.
Pavel calls it a radiation. Basically, what he says is you make a real tight fist, and if you squeeze hard enough, your forearm gets tight, your bicep gets tight, your tricep gets tight, your shoulders, your upper back. That's a radiation where creating tension transfers all the way up the kinetic chain. And if you brace your abdomen, it starts from the core out, and then everything sets up. Another way that we teach bracing, besides the wiffle ball bats upside your back, is with a band, an elastic band. I did a back rehab protocol on the site. And one of the first things I talked about was how to brace, because it is the first thing that happens before any movement is engaged. And I showed one of my fighters, I wrapped a jump stretch band around his stomach and I tied it real tight. And I said, before you do anything, I want you to create tension in that band. So he breathed in and his abdomen expanded against the band. The band became a lot tighter.
Mm-hmm.
I said, whenever you do anything, I don't want to see any slack in that band, okay? Because I know that that would disengage the brace. The other thing that is really important when we teach bracing, I don't know where I'm going with this. I'm just talking off the top of my head. But,
that's good, man.
One of the things that I see a ton is the movement begins with a brace, but they lose it halfway through, even if they're holding their air.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, let's say we're doing a squat, like a box squat. I mean, 9 times out of 10, I see an athlete come down. They start with a good brace of the abdomen. They're pulling down on the bar, and this is a small tip from a seminar I went to. McGill, Cressy was there as well, but he said you can add 20 to 30 pounds on your squat just by engaging your lats by pulling down on the bar. Okay, so that's the power of bracing, but what we see is after that initial brace, before any movement is engaged, they start eccentrically loading down into the box, and they lose that brace. All the tension is gone, especially if they sit on the box for any length of time. They disengage their hips, they lose that neutral lumbar, they round forward, all that stuff. Okay, so something I call progressive bracing or cumulative bracing or bracing throughout the full movement. You have to learn to coordinate that breathing and tension until the rep is complete and you can reset again or perform another rep, you know, depending on what exercise you're doing. But that's something for you coaches out there when you're watching any compound movements where, you know, there's spinal loading, anything like that. Are they bracing throughout the entire lift or do they just brace during the initial setup of the lift? That's really a big deal. And that's something that a lot of people miss. You know what I mean? They, okay, brace. So they brace to start, but they lose that brace as, you know, anywhere from the eccentric phase to the concentric phase, it's lost somewhere. So that's really a skill that you need to continue drilling. And, you know, any type of technique issue or whatever, I love video. Flip cam is a savior. You know, I can tell an athlete, you know, 10 times, hey, you're losing your brace, you're rounding off the box, stuff like if we're just talking about squats, but they don't get it and they keep doing it until I show them a video of what they're actually doing and then their next rep is perfect. You know what I mean? So if you guys, you know, $100 for a flip cam, it's like one of the best training teaching tools, not only for like new athletes or novice lifters, but for athletes that have been with you for a while. Now, if you're, I'm going to go on for an hour, but this all changes when fatigue sets in. So you got to think about, okay, breathing, bracing, and as the set goes on, or if you're near the end of multiple set workout, are they maintaining that form as fatigue sets in? Because fatigue changes everything. It changes your ability to create tension. You're fatigued. Technique goes away. So that is where a good coach steps in. You know, you need to we talk about auto-regulation, all that stuff, but auto-regulation isn't only for, you know, how we talked about warm-up and integrating warm-up into the work sets, but auto-regulation is quality over quantity. If you have something written down, it's not set in stone. You might be on your fifth set of squats, or if you're doing speed, whatever, speed slows down or form breaks down, or they can't continue proficiency with the technique, cut the set or, you know, cut the exercise, move on. Okay, so breathing, tension, bracing, all that stuff, you need quality. Okay, and that's something that you just always have to be watching what's going on. Okay, that's it. Are you there?
I mute myself so I don't, you don't hear me like breathing or you hear background. My dog's like sleeping over there and he's making noises, so I have to mute myself. But what I was saying was lots of great points. You know, again, hopefully a lot of take home points for the listeners. And, you know, one of the things that I kind of see sometimes, and not a lot, but you mentioned, you know, people that brace at the beginning, but I see sometimes with athletes that they won't brace for that first rep, then they'll brace for the rest. Like, yeah. You have that people that just have problems like locking it in like on a trap bar deadlift.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of with the loading. It's like a slight reactive or elastic loading.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, what happens is that first, especially with a trap bar dead, you're doing that starting strength as opposed to a squat where it's more reactive. You know, you're preloading those tissues on that first rep. Mm-hmm. Trap bar, you have to engage those motor units from a dead stop.
Yeah.
And not until that second rep where they're eccentrically loading does the form lock in. I see that all the time. That's a really, really good point.
Well, I think that is where we'll stop hammering you with the questions as we're getting close to 10 o'clock on Saturday. But I want to ask you, because I actually went back and forth with you a little bit through email. You actually have like a seminar coming up. I don't know if there's even spots left, but can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Fortunately, we're sold out. We actually oversold it. I'm just so grateful. It's an awesome event. What happened was, you know, we have the amped warm, Joe DeFranco and I have the amped warm-up system. Mm-hmm. And we're actually coming out with a new DVD called Power. And that's power development for athletes or anyone, you know, who wants to be more powerful. And I'm very, very proud of it. The Power DVD should be released in a couple weeks. It has over 90 exercises just for power. And the guys that we had to do the production on it is, I mean, they're amazing. It looks like a movie. I've never had a DVD this well done. And the graphics, everything is just so amazing. The other cool thing is we have a lot of pro NFL athletes that are in it, you know, so it's not old man Smitty doing death jumps and stuff like that. So there's some high quality work in this. So what we did was because the two products, Amped and Power, are applicable to basically everyone, we wanted to build a seminar series around both of them. So what we're doing is we're doing a day one Amped warm up and a day two Power development. And I mean, we announced it on a Sunday night at midnight, and it was sold out by Thursday, 20 wow. spots. And then from there, we actually oversold it maybe three or four spots. So there's people calling us saying we want to come in. You know, people are coming in from the UK, from Florida, from Canada, Michigan, all over the place, Massachusetts. So we're very, very fortunate. I'm excited about it. The cool thing is I think there's such a demand and people really want this quality information that we're going to turn it into something that we do ongoing, maybe every couple months or so, so everyone can get a chance to come in. I'm just so grateful and really excited about it. We had one AMP seminar so far, and that was before the Power DVD came out. Mm-hmm. And now the Power DVD is coming out, so we're going to do a two-day instead of the one-day. The first AMP seminar was amazing. We had 20 guys that came and some women, and it was awesome. We had like team training, and it was like a whole day of just mobility and warm up, and it was great. So I'm really excited where it's going, and I think that it's going to be a real popular seminar series. So I appreciate you asking.
Well, very cool. It's just a bummer it's all sold out, but that's why you guys got to make sure that you're following Smitty and make sure you add him as a friend on Facebook so you can, you know, stay up to date on this stuff so you don't miss out. Like, that's one of the great things about social media is it's instantaneous and you can, you know, stay up to date on everything that's going on. But, you know, lastly, you know, anything coming up on the website?
Just more posts. I was telling people the other day that I have probably 2 years worth of content filmed that I'm just releasing slowly and building videos and articles around it. Livestrong, I'm a featured writer there. I'm very grateful for that. And I just got asked by the editor to be part of a book and all this stuff. So there's tons of stuff happening. The Power DVD is coming out. I'm just really fortunate, really excited. And like I said, I'm just working my butt off to get more content out for people. And my main site is DieselSC, like Kevin said, .com. Twitter is Diesel Strength. And if you go to Facebook, there's a Diesel community, Diesel Strength Conditioning. But, you know, I really appreciate the opportunity. I love the FitCast. I've been on here several times. And like Kevin said, we've known each other for several years. So it's good hearing from him.
Well, thank you. And, you know, thank you for coming back on and talking shop for a little bit. And we'll definitely have you on again. I think we talked in the past, like getting you on at least like, you know, once every month or two, because there's always, you know, more stuff to talk about. We didn't even get through like half the stuff that I threw on there anyway. So there's definitely some more stuff down the road. And we ended up getting some questions on Facebook while we were recording. So we'll save those for next time. But Smitty, thank you again for joining me on Saturday night. And I hope you have a great rest of the weekend.
You too, brother. I really appreciate it. Thanks, everyone.
This week's episode featured music by MHV and Animetta Gucci. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.